Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
So much to talk about. Daniel Snyder has fired another coach. Washington Post columnist Jerry Brewer has written a great column about why the successor is already doomed. Joining us now. How are you? Where are you?
I'm in Seattle, man.
You're back.
Yes, I am.
What's it like to be back in the Northwest? What changed? Because for people who don't know, you moved it. Where did you end up? Like Baltimore or D.C.? Where'd you end up?
In Arlington. I was on the Virginia side.
Okay.
Yeah, it's, it's been fantastic coming back. I mean, for me, it's the same old Pacific Northwest. I've been to Seattle. I've been to Portland as well and everything in between. And, I mean, I've seen how both cities have developed, and I've heard from the locals how some things are annoying about that development, but at its core, it's still the same. And all the reasons that I wanted to come back, it's still the same place. So that's a wonderful. And I just love this region. And even though I'm away from it quite a bit, I'm happy to call it home again.
Jerry Brewer, Washington Post sports columnist, is with us. Daniel Snyder fires another coach. Jay Gruden was 0-5. You wrote a great column about, hey, man, it needed to happen, but the next man in is probably doomed.
Yes. I mean, when you look at it, Daniel Snyder has had 8 coaches in 20 years. He's had guys who have been good program builders elsewhere, like Marty Schottenheimer, fired him. He's had coaches who've won Super Bowls, brought back Joe Gibbs, lured Mike Shanahan, didn't work out. He's tried to go the non-conventional route with Jim Zorn, didn't work out. He tried to go the blossoming offensive coordinator route with Jay Gruden, didn't work out. You know, after a while, you have to look at it and say, it's very clear what the problem is. The problem is the owner. It starts with him, and it starts with the team president, Bruce Allen, who's been there for 10 years, had very little success. His winning percentage is about to go under the 400 mark if they lose too many more games. And yet that's his buddy, and that's his shield. He's the guy who takes the most criticism, and they just feel like they don't have to answer to anyone. So it doesn't matter who they get. They go out and get Bill Belichick. They find a way to screw it up with Bill Belichick.
What needs to happen? Does Snyder need to be hands-off? I mean, it's like asking Jerry Jones to be hands-off.
Yeah, he needs to be hands-off. You got to have a really good team president that kind of functions almost as your de facto owner day-to-day, like a chairman type guy. You got to have just a fantastic talent evaluator, running your football operations. And then you got to have a coach that's in alignment. And that's their problem, is they're never in alignment from ownership level to the front office level to down to the coaching level. And no matter what they do, it doesn't work. And you look at them, and there's been times when you felt like they had the talent to make it work, but you look back and you wonder, why do they keep winding up in the same place? It's because they never see anything through. I always say they do about 50% of what's right. So they'll get just enough down the road to where fans who are incredibly resilient will come back and start to believe in something, but then they get halfway there and they just abandon them. And that is the worst possible feeling. And now, I mean, John, you know how it is. You're talking about Daniel Snyder. This is his 20th year as the owner. And so you're talking about a generation of fans that only know them as this terrible franchise, as opposed to the franchise that won 3 Super Bowls under Joe Gibbs with 3 different starting quarterbacks. And then you look at it and you say, Daniel Snyder's only 54 years old. The expectation is he'll own this franchise for another 30 years easily, if with good health. And so where could they be at his 50th anniversary if they're just so far down this road after 20 years?
Jerry Brewer, sports columnist, Washington Post, is our guest. The quarterbacks in the NFL, you've got Jared Goff, who's struggling, and Matt Ryan, and Ben Roethlisberger's out, and Carson Wentz has been spotty. You've got Drew Brees out with an injury. Yeah, you wrote that Russell Wilson is the best he's ever been. What do you see?
I see a guy who is throwing with anticipation. You know, it used to be, you go back to the Seahawks Super Bowl years, a guy had to be open for a couple seconds before he really would let it go. And now he's throwing guys open. You see the throws that he's making into tight windows when a guy has 1 yard of separation or even less if somebody's hovering all over him. You see a player who is elevating the talent around him instead of being this guy who's mostly managing the game and then making a few spectacular plays that only he can make. You see the consistency, I think the accuracy that he's passing with, the command of the offense, and just the ability to make extraordinary plays in a small number package of passes. You know, I think when we think of the typical franchise quarterback, you think of a guy who's going to throw it 40 times. In today's NFL, that's not Russell Wilson. We just saw him on Thursday night. He threw 23 passes.
Yeah,
and I think Jared Goff threw 49 and threw for 395 yards. A good game by Goff. But Russell Wilson, 4 touchdown passes and 23 passes, 268 yards, didn't turn the ball over, made every play that his team absolutely needed him to make. And he's an unorthodox franchise quarterback, partly because of his size, but he is the epitome of a franchise quarterback.
Jerry Brewer with us. How good do they look? Because at the beginning of the year, we were talking about, you know, they're an 8-win team, a 9-win team. I now say that's a 10-win team, and gosh, they're kind of interesting at a time in which the league is, you know, the Rams don't look dominant, the Saints, who knows? How good do they look in your eyes?
Yeah, they do look good. It's kind of crazy to think that the one game they lost was to the Saints without Brees in a game in which they really didn't show up.
Yeah.
They got a chance now. I mean, you know, getting off to this 4-1 start, they're not the most dynamic team. They don't have nearly as much star power as they did in their heyday, but they still have, you know, one of the 5 best quarterbacks in the game in Wilson, and the best middle linebacker in the game in Bobby Wagner. Adding Jadeveon Clowney was huge for just their overall talent level. And then they've got, you know, they've got other pieces, you know, in that sort of KJ Wright, TJ Lockett level that are very good, solid football players. I feel like they need one mega player and a few more really good, you're kind of like B-minus type starters for you to feel great about them. But if all of those guys are playing, if they're healthy and they're playing like they're capable of playing, they're going to be right in it. But you do look at them at 4-1 and you say they won 2 games by 1 point, and they won a game against the Steelers, who aren't any good, on the road by 2 points. So technically, that's a soft 4-1, you know, by the letter of the word, you know, of the, you know, the strength of your victories. But I think ultimately for them, and knowing how Pete Carroll coaches, just the confidence and the connection that they're building, I think is far greater than how many points they're beating somebody by. The next 2 weeks are huge for them. They go to Cleveland, and then they have a home game against the Ravens. Are they going to be 4-3 after that? Are they going to be 5-2? Could they find a way to get both of those and get 6-1? And I think that's when we'll, after 7 games, after 8 games, right at midseason, I think we'll have a better beat on exactly what they are. But they're either a wild card playoff team or they're a potential top 2 seed. And they've got some momentum and they got a chance and they have to really capitalize on things.
Trailblazers ramping up for their season. The NBA is on. Obviously, the Warriors took a step back, but the West still looks tough. Blazers add Hassan Whiteside, Kent Bazemore. And, you know, the national narrative is they've taken a step backwards, even though they got better. Where do you see the Blazers outside in? You pay attention to the league.
Yeah, John, I think, you know, one thing that people are kind of discounting, there's so much change, you know, especially to all these teams in the West. At some point, continuity is going to really matter. And just being able to grind out wins in the regular season. And I know the Blazers made, like, you know, they got 7 or 8 new players, so it's weird to talk about them having continuity, but they're still the same Blazers at the top. I mean, you still know who's going to take about 40 of those shots.
Yeah.
and so they still got Dame and CJ, and, you know, I mean, we'll see how some of these other guys fit in, and we'll see – when Nurkic comes back, you know, what kind of an impact he can make and some other factors with this team. But I look at them and I say, you know, the Blazers know who they are as the season begins. And they don't have the ceiling that the Clippers do, but the Clippers got some figuring out. They don't have the star power that the Lakers have. But Lakers got to figure some things out. You know, even Utah, which is mostly the same Utah Jazz, they're trying to get a new point guard, Mike Conley, who should be way better for them, but he has to get adapted to their system. So I look at Portland and I look at the Denver Nuggets, and I see people wanting to kind of slide them down from where they were last year. And I wouldn't be surprised if both of them wind up as top 4 seeds instead of in that 5, 6, 7 realm that I see them starting to slip down, because I think they have a capability, and they really got to capitalize on this, both of these teams, to start the season fast and to really have their identity and their comfort level become their strengths in some of these early season games. So I don't know if they're going to be able to make it back to a conference finals, but I do expect them to put themselves in a position in which we wouldn't be shocked if they made another deep playoff run.
Jerry Brewer, Washington Post sports columnist with us. Before I cut you loose, Daryl Morey, GM of the Rockets, tweets some support for the protesters in Hong Kong. The NBA is yielding to China over this. You've got the Brooklyn ownership group that's upset about this and defending China, of course, and the NBA is tiptoeing around. What do you make of this whole thing?
Well, I mean, it was bound to catch the NBA at some point. I think that, they've been able to get away with kind of having it both ways, you know, allowing their employees, you know, not just the players, but their employees to have this voice while they're trying to run this mega $1 million business. And there's all kinds of conflicts and all kinds of issues. And I mean, it would have been a lot easier if Daryl Morey had ticked off somebody domestically than what he did. I mean, he really stepped in it. I really focus, you know, on this, you know, ultimately, I mean, people are looking at it, you know, is the NBA being hypocritical, or are they, you know, selling out to big Chinese business? Like, I look at it more from kind of the personal standpoint of, okay, Daryl Morey in this case, but it could be LeBron James or someone in another case. You've been empowered, and and the league really encourages you to use your freedom of speech. But don't be frivolous and foolish about it. And make sure that what your the message that you're sending, whether it be a tweet or, you know, some video, make sure that you're well read on the issue that you're diving into. And if you're going to take a stance on something, make sure that it's worth it and that you have considered all aspects of this. Because clearly, we all know Daryl Morey is a smart man, but he had no idea of what he was stepping in. And he hadn't considered, you know, the entire history of China and just how delicate, supporting that was. And that's the real unfortunate part. You know, now if he understood what he was doing and he did it anyway, that's another thing. But the last thing you want is for people to foolishly be costing you business, to ignorantly be costing you business. And so I think everyone in the league who wants to raise their voice needs to realize there's a responsibility that comes with that. And the next time they think about sending some tweet that they think is cool and rah-rah, or they get on the shop on HBO and they want to say something about, you know, politically, or say something about anything that's going on in the NCAA or otherwise, make sure you're well read on it, and make sure you're delivering that message the way you intend. Because the last thing you want to do is send some 6-word tweet, and then the next day you're like, "Oh man, I'm sorry."
Right.
and you cost your company millions of dollars. I mean, that's the other side of it. You have a voice, but you also need to realize all of the repercussions. And your stance is your stance. You know, go for it. But in this case, Morey really looks like a fool because he had no idea what he was doing.
Jerry Brewer, Washington Post. Jerry, thank you for making time for us. I appreciate it, man.
All right, anytime, man.
All right, there's Brewer. Great stuff. You should be reading him and following him. I have more thoughts on this NBA thing, and they're taking heat from it, and probably from the wrong place. I'll tell you more about it next. I've got a pair of Ducks tickets to the Friday night game against Colorado. I've got a pair of Beavers tickets to the Saturday game against Utah at Reser Stadium. They're both great seats. I say all the time, I'm not home of the Ducks, I'm not home of the Beavers, I'm home of the truth. I'm also home to the tickets. We're going to take your phone calls coming up. I got a quick break to take. We'll take your phone calls. Plus, I will get...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.